Welcome to Writing the Wrong Way, where we talk about how writing works, how writers work, and how why the best writers risk being strange. And today I am just want to talk through a couple topics. I got an email from a student recently which had a lot of questions in it. I thought they were really excellent questions. Now, to save the students, you know, anonymity, I'm just going to call the student Casey. So Casey has some great questions, questions that I'm often asked in isolation, you know, piecemeal. Someone will ask me this question here, this question there. But she's sort of asking a bunch of questions all together. And I think there's a really good logic to why she's asking those questions all together. And so I just want to walk through my answers to Casey's questions in such a way that I think it will be useful to a lot of people. Not just Casey, of course, I want to answer, you know, Casey's questions. And this is a bit more of an economical way than just writing an answer. But also, on top of that, these are questions that either many people are asking me or should ask me, perhaps. Not that I have all the answers, but these are questions that I do find people don't ask because, you know, they just don't feel that they're good questions. You know, there's a kind of question in writing that people don't ask because they feel like the answer should be obvious and they're embarrassed to ask sometimes, or they just feel like, you know, something's wrong with them for not knowing the answer. I don't think that's Casey's problem. I mean, Casey's asking the questions. But other people, what their problem often is that they don't realize these actually are good questions. And the mystery that surrounds things in the writing industry sometimes, it just gets counterproductive in a lot of ways. So anyway, I love these questions. Thank you, Casey, for writing to me to ask these questions. I'm going to try to just walk through this email and its questions and answer them as best I can. So the first question in a chain of questions here is, how do you decide which piece of writing you want to work on if you have more than one story or piece of writing going on, and how do you prioritize them? Now, just to preface all this, Casey's asking both about writing prose and writing script, like screenplays, television scripts, things like this. So it's a good general set of questions, although later on it's going to get a bit more specific. This is a great question that I'm asked a lot in different forms. How do you decide which piece of writing you want to work on if you have more than one story, piece of writing going on, and how do you prioritize them? So the first answer to this question is going to sound like a non-answer. I would suggest that if you are in an early career stage, so if it's early on in your career, you should really avoid having more than one story or piece of writing going on. So it's best, I know it's a bit of a sidestep to the question, and I will answer the question, but it's best if you don't have this problem in the first place. So the problem here is, you know, you've got a lot of different projects. How do you decide which project you're going to prioritize? Again, it's best if you just avoid the problem by simply not working on multiple projects. So before you start a new project, finish your old project. So I really advise people in an early stage of their careers to work optimally. When you are in an early stage of your career, it can be very frustrating because you often feel like, you know, you got to get this, that, and the other thing figured out before you can go on to this situation later in your career where you're going to be in the place where you can work optimally. People often have the idea that to write the best way, like to work in the best manner, they have to get to some later career stage. Actually, what's going to happen is the reverse. Right now in your early career, you have the opportunity to work in the best way possible. Later on, as you have more success, it'll get harder and harder and harder to work in the best way possible. Later on, what's going to happen is people are going to make demands on you. you're going to have more just life responsibilities as, you know, your budget gets higher and your expenses get higher. You're going to have family members. You literally often will have more family members. You'll marry somebody, you'll have kids maybe, you know, whatever. Even just family members you don't spend a lot of time with now, maybe you're going to have to spend more time with later. Maybe your parents are going to get older and they're going to get sick and you're going to have to spend more time just taking care of them. You know, as your life goes on, you'll just have more personal responsibilities in your personal life. But also, if you start to kind of develop your career as a writer, and if you actually have success as a writer, even small success, you very quickly get into this position where instead of being sort of the lone wolf writing in your room by yourself, you know, at that early stage, your frustration is that nobody cares what you're writing. Nobody knows what you're doing. Nobody cares what you're doing. You know, you just feel invisible. You don't realize what a benefit it is to be invisible. Once people start paying attention to you, it gets so hard. It gets so much harder. It's so much harder for me as a professional writer, a person who writes quote unquote all day. It's so much harder for me now that I, you know, can make six figures as a writer. It's harder than when I was making no money as a writer, because back then I was invisible. Being invisible was very frustrating for me at the time, but it was a strength. And I look back on it in a certain nostalgic manner. I mean, I don't miss those days in some ways, but a real problem that exists as you get more known and as you just kind of are starting to collaborate and so on is you are no longer invisible. Publishers want things from you. Clients want things from you. You just are collaborating with other people in a different space, and they all want stuff from you. And that's not bad. It's often, you know, I'm privileged to be in that position, but it does really screw up your workflow. The best way to work is to not have those problems, to take advantage of the fact that nobody cares what you're doing and you're invisible and nobody sees you. Take advantage of that. You are in the position early in your career to have the optimal workflow, the best possible structure for your writing career, your writing day, your writing session, whatever it is, which is you have one project, not a bunch of projects, and you just do that one project. And you have a notebook where you maybe take notes or write down ideas for later projects that you might do when you're done this project, but you force yourself to finish that project. Now, as you get in the position where you have more projects and you can't just force yourself to kick on a project, yes, you get into this position that I'm in now where I've got 18 active writing projects. Now, that's just writing projects. I have at least 18 active writing projects that are in real development, in the sense that there's some actual like steam underneath some of these things in some way, shape, or form. Either that's, you know, I've got a publisher, or I've got a contract, or I've just got a bunch of a draft done. I've got like some time and sometimes money invested into at least 18 different projects right now. So the problem that I have is maybe a mirror of the problem that you're having on a different scale. I have to determine which ones I'm going to prioritize. Now, I struggled with this very issue for many, many years, and I came up with what is effectively, I think, the best solution, and it's a simple solution. That's one of the reasons I think it's the best solution. The simple and best solution, in my point of view, is this. One, you only work on a single project at a time. You do not divide your time between multiple projects insofar as it is possible. So the caveat is that, insofar as it is possible. But how do you then pick which of these projects, if you've got 18 like I do, how do you determine which one you're spending your time on, your focus on? I still kind of do this version, by the way. I try not to jump from project to project for this very reason. So the way I determine my priority is simple. And I really encourage you to do this simple process. And the reason that I suggest this process is that it takes the emotion out of it. I suggest you work on the project that is closest to being done. So just look at all the projects you've got. You know, in this case, I've got 18 projects in front of me. I am simply going to work on the project that is closest to being done. And what I mean by closest to being done is it would take the least amount of time to complete. Or if I can't fully estimate the amount of time it would take to complete it, it is just like the furthest to the finish line. So for me right now, it's, you know, I guess I can't talk about some of these projects, but I have a comic book, a graphic novel, comic book series in multiple chapters. So it's, you know, multiple issues that are coming together to make a graphic novel length story. I'm basically in like the last like 90% of that. I got, you know, I basically am at the point where I've got maybe 40 pages and I'm done. 40 comic pages. And really I'm closer to like 20 pages at this point. There's a couple of things, but basically I'm very close to being done. I'm less than 10% left of this project. So that is the project I'm focusing on. And when I'm done that project, not before, but when I'm done it, ideally, again, I'll get to like when I would, the non-ideal scenario here. But ideally, I would just work on that project until it is done. And then I would go to the next project that is the closest to being done. Now, the reason I suggest this is because it is extremely important that you finish what you start. It is so important. It's hard to express how important it is, but you really have to understand this. From your point of view, and from my point of view in this case, I've got 18 projects on the go, and from my point of view, I know where all these projects are at. I've got so much time and words and so on sunk into all these different projects. To me, they look like they're all in different stages. You know, one's half done, one's almost done, one's, you know, just getting started. But from the outside perspective, if you're not me, none of these projects are done. And that's just it. It's 0-1. It's done or it's not done. Until it is done, it basically means nothing. Now, I'm not saying that it was a waste of time to sink your time in that project. But I'm just saying, like, from the point of view of an outside observer, from the point of view of a publisher or a production company, if the thing isn't done, it doesn't exist. If it's not done, it doesn't matter whether you've written 50,000 words or 5 words, it's the same thing to the publisher. 50,000 words and 5 words look the same if the goal was 55,000 words. Does that make sense? So your 97% done project and your 1% done project are effectively the same in that they're both not done. And until they are done, they mean nothing to anyone but you. So for that reason, you really need to focus on things being done. So there's just a mathematical career reason why you need to focus on finishing things above and beyond all others. Aspects of your career, you need to, one, focus on finishing things. Starting things is not as important as finishing things. And you need to force yourself to finish things. You really, really need to force it. It is a natural thing to do as you're approaching the end of a project to get caught up in a new project. And it is the thing you must at all costs avoid. Now, I know some people will disagree with me on this, but I maintain that I am right from the point of view of having a career. From a different point of view, you know, sometimes my friends are right who say, oh, you know, you should jump to the thing you're most interested in. I get that point of view, but I maintain that it is inaccurate if you want to both be a creative person and have a career. Now, if you just want to be a creative person and do things that are fun and enjoy your creativity, that's great. But in that scenario, it's not as important to finish. If you want to do that, be an artist plus have a career, you need to finish. You just need to. You have to force yourself to do it. You have to force yourself to not get caught up in other things. I've said that in different forms, but it's a very important rule. Pick one thing, finish it. Do not get caught up in other things. Buy a notebook. all your great ideas that are not the thing you're working on, write them in the notebook. If you're having a real problem with this, then set aside time for writing and also time to just write things in your notebook. You know, if you're really having a hard time with finishing, one of the things that I sometimes suggest is you buy a notebook that you just keep on your writing desk. And, you know, if you've scheduled yourself to write from 8 to 10, or, you know, you spend the first 10 minutes just scribbling notes on other projects you'd rather be doing in your notebook, and then you write for those 2 hours, and then you scribble in 10 more minutes, you know, other things you wish you were doing instead of this project, or what you're going to do when you're done this project. You know, schedule your time to daydream, buy a notebook for daydreaming, start new projects, get new ideas, record all those notes down, but don't actually start a new project. Finish the project you're on. Priority means one thing. That's the literal definition. When you have a priority, there is one thing above the others, and you really need to maintain that approach as much as possible. Stick to doing one thing, finish it before you move on. Just pick the thing that you're closest to being done. Now, my two sort of ways I bend this rule for myself is I will allow myself to move on to a new project if I decide to kill the project. So if I'm working on a project and I really dislike it, or I've gone to the point where I just really think the idea is flawed, or I'm just not liking this project anymore, I won't always force myself to finish it in those scenarios. Like, if basically I've given up on the book mentally, then I'll just give up on the book. You know, if I'll take the project, I'll throw it in the trash, I'll never return to it. So that's just sort of the simple expression of this rule. Focus on writing and finishing the thing that you're as closest to being done, unless you are prepared to abandon it forever and never finish it. Because you have to understand that that's what you're going to be doing if you just keep jumping from thing to thing. If you just keep jumping from thing to thing and you think in your head, oh, I'll get back to it later, the reality is you probably won't get back to it later. So it's a way to psychically let yourself out of the trap or of the trick of it, you know? You get into this trap of thinking, oh, I'll just come back to this later. It's better to just decide you're never going to come back to it and throw it right in the trash, delete the file, get it off your computer, throw it in the trash. That's kind of what you're doing when you jump from project to project. So if you're not willing to do it, if you're not willing to take your manuscript that you spent time and throwing in the trash, if there's still something there, if you really do want to finish it, force yourself to finish it. Don't jump to a new project. But, you know, if you have gotten to the point where you're like, you know what, the reason I'm not finishing this is because I really hate it. This novel sucks and I don't ever want to finish it. I mean, I've done that. I've gotten like 50 pages into a book and I thought, you know what, this is crap. And I just decided to ditch it and never come back to it. That's fine. There's not a problem with doing that. It's fine to abandon a project purposefully. What is not good is if you're abandoning a project thinking you'll get back to it later. It's better to just literally make the decision to abandon it forever. But of course, if you really care about the project, you should just finish it. Now, so that's the sort of rule. Finish the project that's closest to being done. That's how you pick which one you work on. Unless you're prepared to abandon it forever and never finish it, in which case, fine, get rid of the thing and move on to the next project that's closest to being done. Now, my other caveat, though, is if an external agent, like an agent, like a publisher, like a client paying you money, if that person comes in and is basically giving you money to do a different thing, or giving you a deadline. So if you get money or you get a deadline from some other person for a piece of work, then switch to that project. So I will work on the thing that's not the closest to being done if I suddenly am running up against a deadline, or if I'm getting paid money to move off my main project. So that's when I'll shift priorities. The only time I'll allow myself to work on the thing that's not closest to being done is if I'm getting money or a deadline some other person. A publisher's giving me a contract and a deadline, clients give me money or whatever. So if you don't have money coming your way and you don't have like a publisher or a production company or somebody giving you a deadline, you should be working on your priority, not theirs. And your priority is to finish things and get in your workspace. Focus on the thing that's closest to being done. Now, the only other caveat I'll give here is if you're doing a collaborative project, like I'm doing a comics these days, I'm doing a lot of comics projects, I'm doing a lot of collaborative projects, you sometimes get to this point where you can't advance the project anymore. So, you know, for this comic I'm doing that I can't really talk about, I was just having a meeting about it earlier today. So the next thing that's happening on that project is the letterer is taking, I'm waiting on art to come in. So I wrote a script based off a story outline that I'd co-developed, gave the script to the artist, waiting for the artist to come back with the art. Now I can't really do anything else in a sense. Like I can't advance the project at this point because I'm waiting for the art to come back. So now I'm forced to move on to the next project because even though that thing is the closest to being done and that's kind of the priority right now, I literally can't really work on it. So I'm going to move on to this other project. And so I'm kind of bouncing between projects in that way. Like again, I've got 18 active projects. So right now, my number one project, I can't advance because I'm waiting for the... I'm waiting for it to come back to me. It's a comics project and it's kind of out with other people and I can't really do anything else till that their work is done and it comes back to me. So then the same thing is true for like a bunch of my other comics projects. So I'm kind of down the line now to like the third of my priorities, simply because, you know, that stuff hasn't come back to me. But once it comes back, I'll switch right back onto it. So like I'll stop what I'm doing and go right back to priority one. When it's possible. And why that thing is the priority is because it's the closest to being done. So sometimes you got to kind of modify things for reality a little bit. But what you really need to do, especially as an emerging writer, is you need to finish things. You need to do it to advance your career because, like I say, if it's 99% done, it might as well have be 0% done. It doesn't matter. It's not done. You can't do anything with it. It can't help you. And other people can't really do anything with it either. The publisher can't publish the book that's not written, you know? Now, there's exceptions to this rule, but for the most part, when you're starting out, you're not going to be able to take advantage of the exceptions. So, like, I could pitch out a book and get a contract, and I've done this. I've gotten a contract for a book that isn't done, but... I mean, I once got a contract for a book based on its title. But, you know, that's not normal. That's not a normal situation, and you're not in that situation when you're starting out. You got to get to the point where you, you know, have other people coming at you, giving you deadlines and money in order to get off your priority one that's closest to being done. But the other reason you have to finish things, by the way, is a mental and psychical reason. You need to prove to yourself that you can finish things, number one. Not only do you have to prove to other people you can finish things, that you're a person they can work with, that you're a writer they can rely on, etc. You can hit a deadline. But you need to prove to yourself that you can finish things. And there's also just this psychical way in which it helps to deal with rejection. I was talking to my daughter once about poetry. She was writing poetry and submitting it around. And she was sort of admitting to me that she was, you know, a little nervous about getting rejected in some ways. And she asked me kind of like how I feel about getting rejected. And I just sort of noted, like, I don't really know, even notice if I get rejected. Like, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me at all. Someone rejects my work. Don't care. Doesn't matter. I moved on within a minute of hearing it. And she said, I was wondering, like, well, why, how did you get to that point? Like, why do you feel that way? Don't you feel like, she said, don't you feel like it's personal? Like, you know, you care about this thing, especially if it's a poem, you know, you put your heart and soul into it and so on. And it's like, yeah, that is true. You know, I do feel like it's a important thing is that, and I care about it and I want them to publish it and it matters to me and all that stuff. But you got to understand, like, it's a math game on some level too, because it's like, back when I only had 10 poems that I thought were any good, sure, it hurt when somebody rejected five of them. If I sent five of them to a person and somebody rejected it, it's like half the work I ever did that I thought was any good and they told me it was garbage. So yeah, that stung. But if I've written 1,000 poems and you don't like 5 of them, well, whatever. I got more poems where that came from. You know what I mean? You get to the point when you've finished a lot of things, you start to kind of get to the point where like every single thing you finished sort of means less to you. In the sense that it doesn't represent the entirety of your writing. Like if you've only written one movie script and nobody likes it, well, that's all the movie scripts you ever wrote and nobody likes them. But if you've written 10 movie scripts and somebody doesn't like this one, well, what about this one? You know, here's another one. You don't like that one? Here's another one. Oh, you don't like that one? Here's another one. You know what I mean? The single thing, the more stuff you write, the more stuff you finish, the less any one of those things represents you fully. And so you kind of get less invested in whether people like them or not, because you know you can do another one. You know, if they don't like this book, you can write another book. And if nobody wants to read that poem, you can just write another poem. Like you kind of get a confidence in your abilities. And then at the same time, each individual rejection or each individual acceptance even, each individual reaction in a sense means less to you because you can kind of gauge it more accurately. You know, it doesn't, no single piece of writing is summing you up as a writer anymore because you've just got a lot of pieces of writing down under your belt, you know? So there's a sort of psychic confidence boosting reason you need to finish things, but there's also just the simple reality of like to have a career, you need to be finishing things. So that kind of answers these clump of questions, like of which one I decide to spend the time on. Let me just note something here that I am not picking what I spend my time on based on my artistic interest in it. Because my artistic enthusiasm and my artistic interest is going to ebb and flow, right? So I'm not starting a project unless it really, really, really matters to me. And once I've decided to slot it in as my number one priority, once I've really sunk some time into it and I've advanced it to the point where it's the closest to being done, if I haven't given up and thrown it in the trash by that point, then I can just take as a given that it's artistically meaningful to me. And yeah, you got moments when you kind of are more connected to it and less connected to it, but that's normal and natural. You're just going to be more enthusiastic about it some days and less enthusiastic about it other days. And you just have to find a way to kind of force yourself to work on it on the days when you're not jazzed about it. And then the days when you are jazzed about it, you know, great. When you're excited to write, you don't really need to work so hard. You just get up and you're excited and you start writing. Where what really makes the difference in a person's career and what really makes the difference and separates writers who succeed and writers who don't is how they deal with the days when they don't feel like writing or when they just think this project is stupid. If you think that project is stupid on Thursday, that's fine. Just work on it anyway. It's your job. You've focused on the priority because it's a priority. Just trust that like 5 weeks ago when you started that project, you weren't delusional and today you just feel bad. Today you think it sucks, but you've been working on it for 5 years, you know, you clearly doesn't suck that bad, or at least, you know, maybe it does suck, but you got to finish it, to really know whether it's good or bad. You can't trust your temporary feelings. You can only trust your artistic judgment over time. So yeah, maybe you hit a point where you think this project, you know, is so flawed, I need to abandon it. I feel like my friend Gregory Kremichek often says, when people ask him whether or not something's good or bad, how do you know if something's good or bad? He likes to say, you don't get to decide what's good or bad. You know, other people will tell you what's good and what's bad. You know, other people get to decide. The market will decide. Readers will decide. Your job isn't to decide on a certain level. Like, you've got your taste and you want to work on things that matter to you. But ultimately, like, it's for them to decide. And if you think it's bad on Thursday or you think it's good on Tuesday, like, who cares? That's not what your job isn't to feel things about it. You know, your job isn't to have emotions around your writing. Your job is to write things. So it's nice if you feel good about it. it sucks if you feel bad about it, but you know, that emotional state is a transitory state. You can't invest everything into it. You know, you need to invest your time and your energy in things that matter to you, sure. Things you think are important, yeah. So don't start the project if you don't feel like it's the project that you really want to take on. But once you really decide to take that on, stick with it. Now, this is the other great advantage, by the way, of having a single priority project and having a notebook where you just jot down, you know, other things you would like to do right now, but you're not going to let yourself start, is that by the time those shiny things, by the time you have your finished project one, you know, you're finally finished project one, hooray, you're finished, time for project two. Well, you dig out the notebook, you dig out the list of all the things you wish you were doing when you were working on project one, but that you weren't allowing yourself to start because you're a professional and you got to finish things. You dig out that long list and you look at the long list and you decide, well, which one should I work on? Which one do I want to work on? Well, now you got a big list and you are picking from a big list. So when you pick, you know, of the 80 ideas you have, the one you pick, if you have it in your head that I'm not going to jump from project to project, if you have it in your head, like, this is an investment, I need to really pick the right thing here, you're more serious about it. You make that decision more deliberately. And you get a better sense of what the trade-off is. It's a real trade-off. Because you're working on project two, you don't get to work on, you know, this other project. You know, because you're working, I'm working on the Eye Collector, I don't get to work on, you know, Dirk Dirksen versus Demons from Mars, you know, like, whatever it is, like, I've got this way in which the one thing is taking priority for me and the other has to take a back seat. Now, which takes the priority, which takes the back seat is maybe going to change over time. But the fact that I'm working on one thing and not the other, as opposed to jumping from thing to thing, I have to be very clear on why. And that's honestly one of the biggest things that you have to figure out here is, like, why should I work on one thing over the other? Now, you, Casey, are asking me this question on some level. How do you know which one you want to or should work on first and spend the most time on? Well, and how do you organize your time on each, for each project? Well, again, what you the best way to organize your time is to not organize your time, to just spend all your time on one project. Don't split it between multiple projects. Unless someone's giving you money or someone's giving you a deadline, don't split your time between multiple projects. But if you're just about to start, again, just pick the thing that's closest to being done. Let the rules make the decision for you. If all things are equal and you're starting from zero, you've got five possible projects you want to work on, you don't know which to work on, you haven't written one word on any of them, no one's giving you money, no one's giving you a deadline, how do you decide in that scenario? Well, it really doesn't matter on a certain level. I would say pick the one you think you'll finish. Pick the shortest one. Pick the one that you think will be the most fun. Pick the one that, you know, pick the one that you think you'll finish. Pick the one that you could finish the fastest, that you'll finish first, the one that you're most jazzed about, the one that you think will stretch you, the one that you think will be, you know, fun. I mean, theoretically, Casey, there should be no project on your list of possible projects that you wouldn't spend a year on. Now, ideally, you won't spend a year on everything, but if you could do nothing else but work on that thing for 1 year, would you? If no, the project shouldn't be on your list. I would really recommend writers think about things in that way. You know, does this thing really matter to you? Do you really want to spend the time to finish it? You know, is it something that you think you're going to learn something from finishing it? Is it going to matter to your career? That's a consideration, I guess. You might, you know, if you're having a hard time making a decision, you could just think about it in those terms, like, well, if this thing was done tomorrow, what could I do with it? You know, could I get an agent with this project or whatever? I don't like to think that way because it is a recipe for putting the cart before the horse. You know, it's a recipe. If you know, if you make decisions based on what you think the industry wants, by the time you're done, the industry may have moved on. You know, you've got to not worry about that stuff. If vampires are hot right now, well, by the time you finish your vampire novel or your vampire screenplay, like, vampires won't be hot anymore. You know what I mean? They'll have moved on. There'll be something, even if vampires are still around and people like them still, something else will be the new hot thing. So you're better off in many ways not trying to second guess the market. You know, leave that to other people. Leave that to the market itself. You know, it'll like you or it won't like you again. In some respects, that stuff's not your concern. It's for other people to determine whether or not they're going to give you $1 million or give you $1,000. You know what I mean? And it seems weird to maybe think that way, but it's dangerous to think the other way. It's dangerous to think what idea of mine is going to make me $1 million. You know what I mean? One, you can't really predict that. But two, it's just a bad way to think. It's always better to do the best job you can. And just pick the project you think you'll do the best job on. Pick the project you think you can finish. Pick the project you're excited about. Pick the project where you're going to go. You can go all in on it. You care about this project enough. It matters to you enough. You're going to stretch your skills enough. You know, pick the thing that is for you, not the market, going to make it a project worth seeing through to the end. Because ultimately, that's what you need to do. You need to see that project through the end. Pick the project that you would do if you could only do one of these projects and then you were going to drop dead. Which project would it be? Pick that project. Forget about the other stuff. You may drop dead. You may not survive to get to the next project. I mean, it's a weird way to think, but you have to think that way. You have to think, if I only have the next 3 months to live and I'm going to spend some of my time on this art project, which one? You want to finish one in that scenario, right? You don't want to get half done five things. Think about it that way. If I only had a year to live, what project would I pick? And would I finish it? Well, of course you would. You'd be motivated in that way. You have to manufacture that level of motivation on a certain level. And you have to not care so much about day to day whether you're feeling it. You just have to force it. You have to be prepared from the start to force it when it gets hard and when you don't want to do it. Sure, set some things in motion to satisfy yourself. If you get, you know, if you're starting to feel burned out on it and you want to work on something else just for fun, I would recommend you don't, honestly. But, you know, maybe pencil a day in to do that. Pencil, you know, a couple hours in to do that. You know, pencil 30 minutes into your day where you just can do whatever you want before you start your serious 2-hour slog through the project. It's fine to do little things like that just to let off steam maybe, but don't start working on a new project seriously. I really don't recommend it. Unless you're in the scenario like I am, where people are giving you money or giving you deadlines, or you're going off to a collaborator, you can't advance the project anymore. You need something to do while you're waiting for it to come back to you. Now, the next big question that Casey's asking here is, once you have a piece of writing completed, what are the next steps? Where do you go to get a second opinion or have someone revise or edit it? So, Casey, this has changed from when I was younger to now. When I was younger, I was part of a writer's group. I took this class with Professor Dennis Cooley. I took his creative writing class at the University of Manitoba. And one of the great things about that class, it was a night class. It was once a week, it was a night class, and then we would often go out to the bar, the class would go out to the bar afterwards. This is back in the day when, you know, like, it was normal to take your, for the professors to take you out to the bar. So, you know, that's not so normal anymore, but, you know, it was a good experience for me, maybe not for everyone else in the world. Dennis Cooley is pretty cool cat, but, you know, some profs, not so great. Broadly speaking, that kind of, you know, thing doesn't happen anymore. But the important thing is not so much me in the class going out at the bar. The important thing was what kind of grew out of that was after the class was over, we had all blocked off like Tuesday night or whatever it was to go to this class, right? So after the class was over, My friend Kamichik, Gregory Kamichik, I met him in that class. He's my collaborator on The Eye Collector and She-Wolf. Kamichik, you know, has said, hey, you know, we're already blocking this night off in our calendars every week. Now that class is over, just come to my house that night and we'll have a writer's group. Everybody's invited. It's writer group time. Same time, different place. You've already got it in your calendar that you're not doing stuff on this night, so come over to my place. It's the writing time. So that's what I started doing. And you know, we had this little writer's group that grew up around Gregory's household. And so it began with sort of the students in that class, and it kind of started growing to, and it, like over time, like the membership changed and things. Now, of course, we don't really do that anymore. But there was like a nice long period where that was happening. And the point here is that when that was extremely useful, there was like having a group of peers that I was working with, and every week I would show them what I was doing, or even just get a chance to talk about what I was doing. Like we had like a system in place. Basically, we had like a system in place. So not every week would they be looking at my work, whatever. But you know, that was really valuable. So I would say like get a writer's group going, like get a group, bunch of your peers together, find some other writers like your age or at your kind of stage in career, and get, you know, a writer's group going. You know, it's invaluable. Just have a place where you're every week or every couple of weeks or whatever it is, you're used to showing them what you've been doing. You're used to talking about where you're at. You're used to getting feedback. You know, here's some people who are just there. Already you've got an infrastructure and a little mini community, and that's where you're going to get your feedback and your reception, your editing, you know, your revisions from them. You're going to get them to edit your work. You know, that's just part of the deal. You'll edit work for them, they edit work for you. That is a great system. It's the system that has kind of writers have done for, you know, time immemorial. J.R.R. Tolkien used to do this, you know, and you can do it too.